I've been to Utah.
No, nigga, I ain't been to Utah.
I've been.
If I ever been to Utah, I'll be trying to get out of Utah.
I've been through Utah.
Okay.
And I stopped in Salt Lake City and went in front of the sort of jazz stadium. And I remember thinking, like, wow.
How many khaki pants did you see?
I mean, it's their city, so they don't feel like they. I don't feel like they need to wear the uniform. The Mormons, like, okay. They don't. But it did feel like, wow, this is a weird fucking place, man. They had that big, you know, Latter-day Saints compound.
How many Mitt Romney jerseys did you see?
Jerseys.
Send the link.
Welcome to Send the Link, where we analyze the latest feeds and reads. I'm Brandon Harrison, my co-captain, co-pilot, and world's most fashionable man, DJ Dollars. DJ, how do you feel about the compliment?
I don't know if I'm worthy of such a title, nor do I seek it, but
also,
I appreciate any compliment.
Top five in humility as well.
Ah, there we go. I'd rather have that one. But Brandon, we just burnt like 45 minutes off pod talking about future Nets transactions. So let's get this one on the road. It might not be one of our normal long hauls, either to the elation or chagrin of our listeners. It's probably for the better.
We chopped it up a bit earlier off pod, and we just got down the biggest of rabbit holes, so pardon us, but we do have things and topics and stuff to talk about. We know there's major cultural events happening in the world and big stories and things like that, and you need our take on it because obviously we're experts and we understand in our fields. Yes, we are.
Yes, and you're in the top five of most humble as well, right?
Okay, I'll take that. Yeah. I'll take that. Yeah, indeed. You prefaced it by saying top five most humble, but I am about to flex on you niggas.
Ooh.
Are y'all ready? I went to D-Wade's last game.
Damn.
I was there. Me, Gabby Union, LeBron, Devin Booker, Charles Oakley.
Anybody else?
Melo.
Joey Badass.
Joey Badass there.
He oddly enough, has like a permanent seat at the Barclays.
Yeah.
It's like an ambassador.
Yeah.
A Drake-like position.
Then it's
the
like,
team.
Damn, how can we get this nigga off this deal? It's like, this was cool, you know, during the Sean Kilpatrick era, but...
How many did Wade put up?
He had a triple-double.
Oh, were it?
And he had 25, I want to say 10 and 10. Udonis Haslam also had at least 15 and 10 in his last game.
Udonis
as well.
Is still in the league?
Yeah.
This is his last game, too?
Yeah.
Also damn, he didn't do his whole, like... Udonis's last dance. He have like a whole media campaign.
No, he did not. He knows his role.
Okay.
But he was ready to pop off and shoot like 9 threes, none of which he made. But he was popping.
Oh, for not.
He was, I'm going for it. Why not?
I love, man. Kobe has set the standards. What, you put up 60 or 50 shots?
And that ostentatious, selfish display. I'm glad it's, I don't think it set the standard, but it did put a line in the sand. Where it's like, you can either do this or you can be super humble. So we've seen, you know, the Dirks of the world and Tim Duncan's of the world. Just be like, all right, he did that. So I'm going to just be humble. Or you can sort of like do what D-Wade did and, you know, make it a year-long spectacle. To everybody telling you how great and humble you are.
All right. I mean, I've never been too much of a Wade fan, but I would have gone if I had the chance.
Oh, no?
I'm not as balling.
Oh, no, you're not a Wade fan?
Not as much.
Interesting.
I mean, I fuck with D-Wade.
I guess, you know, the crowds of Wade fans came out. So I was like, oh, I didn't realize that. I like him, but.
I think what did it for me was, whose arm did he dislocate in the playoffs at one time? Was that Rondo?
Rondo. Yeah. Or the time he just tackled Lance Stephenson?
A couple of little, you know, veteran dirty things that I understand on principle, but did I like it? No, because I was probably rooting against him at the time.
That's fair.
Yeah. And he shot a million free throws. In that first finals against my beloved Dirk.
Yeah.
And the Mavs.
It's been interesting juxtaposition between the two of them this season. And I like when things are poetic in that way. So it's like, you know, play two finals against each other, one on one, and retiring at the same time. So, and did you see the ceremonies for both of them in their last home games?
I saw probably like screenshots and clips. So I'm aware.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That's cool.
Yeah, much more of a Dirk fan, personally.
Hey, he earned it. He earned your fandom.
Yeah. 21 years?
21 years.
Shit.
Indeed.
One half my life.
The game was a good experience. It was good to just go to one of these big moments in, you know, sports history and say that you were there.
Right.
It's always fun to have those memories, especially considering I was like, could I flip this? And it just wasn't, It wasn't quite enough to,
right,
you know, make me do it.
Yeah, actually, can I hold you real quick?
Yes.
I wanted, I'm definitely a Jeter fan.
Yeah.
And wanted to go to his last game at Yankee Stadium. And I pretty much just waffled and was like, yeah, you know, I'll just watch it on television. He fucked around and had, what, like three hits and the game-winning single at the end of the game. Like, it was just this storybook ending. And I was just so, so, like, high on the inside. Like, damn, how the fuck could I miss this? Like, so I'm happy you went. Like, definitely, if you have the means, you know, experience things in person.
So, this is the note that DJ said, but just to clarify, memories have value. Stories have value. And you can always make back $114, $128, which is what my ticket was going for, which was not quite enough. Maybe it was a little more. It would have been there. But this NBA talk is fun.
Yeah.
But there's more important things on the horizon. Playoffs is coming, you know, but there's other incredibly, I don't know, culturally relevant over the past decade happenings that are beginning this weekend, DJ.
Winter is coming.
Winter has arrived.
What's been more relevant? Like, I didn't know where you were going, but that was actually, it's pretty good. No, Wade in the Heat or Game of Thrones, more relevant.
Game of Thrones.
No, yeah, that was like one of those like very stupid hot take things. I think I lost like a thread that I was trying to do. But yeah, man. I want us not to try to be like ultra anticipatory and hot takey. I think you had something, some abstraction from the internet.
As you guys know, the premise of the spot is we like to give you a nice lens through the words and the ideas that are on the internet. And Hank Stuever.
Ooh, how do you spell that?
Stuever, or Stuever.
Ooh.
If you're out there, Hank, has a piece at the Washington Post, also known as WAPO.
WAPO.
Take that. Was Game of Thrones supposed to mean anything? Only if you wanted to. Even from the title, I kind of found this endearing because of not only all of the social, cultural, historical angles that Game of Thrones has sort of found its way into when people are making their takes on it, but also because of just the media blitz of, I can't, like, this press junket and...
Yeah, this is an all-timer. This and Avengers?
At the same time, like, this shit, Madison Avenue about to explode. Just, it's insane.
Yeah.
And considering, you know, looking at things like that and different, did you see the Mountain Dew brand partnership? I told you about it. But you know, they did the Migos song. I know they did songs before, but
the mixtape?
Then they did mixtapes before, but like but they did a specific one with Mountain Dew and their athletes and other people who have Mountain Dew deals. And they did a video as well with Migos doing a remix version of the theme. I see there's entire retrospectives that HBO is putting out with each actor talking about what they've done. I know you're a big Ringer fan. Their coverage has been into the most minutia of this possible.
I mean, yeah, they kind of quadrupled down on content. I'm not too keen on that. I actually listen to more of their podcasts than read their content because a lot of it just seems like on just a consistent churn and you don't really know if it's not even a quality control type of thing. It's just like, what is the significance of having a different Game of Thrones piece for every day of the week? Like, they have an entire, they have like 50 pages up of Game of Thrones content. And a lot of like weird, I know this is an aside, but I've seen so much, You know what's a weird thing to me is speculatory content about a television show
that you know is gonna come out.
Yeah, like it's a narrative that's already made. It's a story that was already written, enacted, and recorded.
We don't know what this person can do, or this. I'm like, why? What, who's this? Yeah,
like nothing is going to change, even if you speculate on it. Like it's not playoff predictions or whatever, you know, it's not that at all. Like those outcomes are not decided. The entirety of Game of Thrones up to this point right now is completely decided. The books, no, and they haven't been. Maybe you could speculate what George R.R. Martin is doing, but for the show, not as much. So especially with the whole content farm coming out of The Ringer and places like that, it's like, oh, what will Jorah do now? Like, what the fuck? Like, I don't know. Like, who cares? It's pretty clear what he's going to do once he does it. Like, this shit is already done. So, I don't know. Maybe that's just me being overly cynical, but it's just like an oddity to me in that regard. But yeah.
I mean, this is a question I have for you. As an HBO stan, how do you feel about your cynicism for this whole Prechelka versus, I guess, the glory of HBO's prime content? Like, are you feeling the pull to participate? Are you feeling it? Or are you just going to this is my show, I watch it? Or are you really pulled into the, Game of Thrones HBO matrix here on this one? Have you watched any of their content that they produced?
No, I haven't. But that's also partially because I just haven't had the time. And I think I've actually made myself pretty disciplined when it comes to particularly television shows and content and whatnot.
Binge mode for you?
No, actually, with binge mode, like the podcast. Yeah. I listen to that. That one's hard. I even recommend that. We don't really try to recommend and send other people money,
because we're haters.
Definitely fuck with that. That's a great podcast. Like they do a really good job, especially when it comes to their recaps. Their precaps that they've done, okay, it's fine. Like just because of the strength of them, I fuck with them, and they put out great content. But yeah, like those things definitely pass the time. But the HBO stuff, no, not really. It's definitely been a really slow burn building up to this moment anyway, because the last season came out, basically 2 years ago?
Yeah.
So I think because of such a lull, I haven't, it really just hasn't really hit me like that. And to be honest, in the back of my mind, I'm kind of preparing myself to be let down.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm trying to mentally push you to do this Game of Thrones party.
I know. Yo, I have a friend. Happening. I have a friend that's doing it. I don't know if I'll plug you. If I'll do it. I don't know. Maybe
he's not my friend.
So we may just do like a real chill thing at the crib. You come through. I just got a nice surround sound set up.
Sound bar, I feel like.
We can hear Drogon flaming niggas or whatever's about to happen. I don't know.
I'm making sword shaped cookies and shit.
Yeah. So man, I think I, along with people that have pay attention a bit more to just how television stories are made and the direction of the show, and reading and listening to a lot of the recaps and whatnot, you definitely saw a drop in the quality of the stories being told, not of the show per se or of like the production, production values, but
the narrative itself.
The narrative itself, how a lot of things were sped up. There weren't as many opportunities for exposition. People were jumping from this place to that place super quickly. There were a couple of just nonsensical plot lines.
The whole white plot.
The white zombie rescue shit. Yeah, and Gendry running 18 miles to that shit was like the marathon run or whatever. Like, I don't know.
Damn, how far can the dragons fly? In like 3 hours or how long that shit was?
I don't, like,
it's just like a Learjet.
She's like she's not the 737 MAX 8 or whatever. Like, she's the 10, or he's a 10. So, that discouraged me just a little bit, or at least it showed the vulnerability of a show that just seemed to have basically like everything accounted for, and it made sense and it was compelling, and that's why so many people were engrossed in the show. So I think it's gonna be fire, and I guess we veered into the aforementioned, just takey part, which is fine. But I'm like, okay, like I want to. It'll be interesting to see how they wrap it up over the course of just six or eight episodes that are like
six,
yeah, that are all like an hour or more a piece. So it's like, how much can they really do in that time? when they spent, you know, three episodes of people walking through the woods and shit, you know, a couple seasons ago. It's going to be a lot of like quick endings, quick deaths, quick reveals, and there won't be as much time as it had been of people above us like really understanding and dwelling on a couple of things. So, am I excited? Yeah. Do I want to hear what the rest of this piece said? Yeah.
So he presents a lot of the sort of counter lenses that have been foisted upon Game of Thrones over these past 10 years, considering how many different almost allegorical things that are going on in it. So I don't know if any of these are your favorite, but there is the climate change plot.
Yes.
Winter is coming.
Winter is coming.
Dun, 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 dun. Obviously, we are, our political system is not engaged already enough to encounter it. They're too worried about petty squabbles, but we're all going to die from winter.
Right.
Climate change. There's also the general political arc and how politicians and their violence and petty foolery.
Nepotism
and all these things.
And feudalism.
Feudalism is destroying the common people that aren't really paid attention to. The fact that all the major players and characters are lords and all these people, and then there's commoners and all that that are sort of inconsequential to the story. There's an interesting note he talks about how sort of this, like, the character of Daenerys first became a hero when it's like, oh, she's going to free slaves and stuff, because obviously she should have just been a rival queen or something, and fighting.
Which definitely played out like this super like white savior thing on screen.
Yeah, it
was like, I remember them like lift her up, like, oh man, like, I guess they had to do this, but it was a little, you know, a little racy.
Yeah. But the idea of the story of this epic, could it have ever been told from the idea of one of these commoners? Or it's funny, as someone who gets into like the, you know, the world building of shit like that, the way it's written apparently, supposedly, is that George R. R. Martin refers to the common people as a small folk.
Right.
This is the normies. So there's that. And there's also another angle that he threw on at the end that's sort of being revealed in the plot of season, I guess, six. This is season seven, last one, or eight?
Yeah, seven, I believe.
In season seven.
Or eight, I think eight.
Just the general idea of the Westeros economy, and that the powers that be will just buy their way out of anything.
Yeah, that seems about right.
There's this idea that Cersei's like, well, the world is ending, but we'll just go to the Iron Bank and solve our problems. So those are all weird ways that Game of Thrones has come to, I guess, represent society over the course of the tens, which is crazy. I think they're almost over.
Yeah.
But my favorite is a industrial look at how is this the last big television show, right? And being HBO's crown jewel, will it be, you know, the last thing that helps others? Production companies in smaller places, smaller being tentatively, because all of these other production houses have geared up to become these huge Uber conglomerates with HBO, AT&T, and NBCU, Comcast, Disney, Marvel thing, all these great houses, so to speak, as Stu ever puts it, trying to beat the impending doom of Netflix running over them. It seems like it could be like the last big show. When I think about the other comparable shows that people think about or talk about, and that people try to have stupid talk after podcasts about and things, Stranger Things, it's just, it ain't it. Like, it's okay. It's cool.
Yeah.
But it's not Game of Thrones. It's not that.
And it doesn't have the depth nor the lore to it for it to even reach that level. It would probably take another fantasy show
that has like that book behind it or something.
Yeah, that was, you know, written by a legendary author or what have you, and gets the right production values and writers behind it, that could maybe approach it. But they really definitely just hit lightning in a bottle with the show.
Yeah.
The HBO production values, they really do, and I know you're familiar with it, but they really do count for a lot, just in terms of the quality control that they really put on it, in the sheen and professionalism and imprimatur of that network, I guess you want to call it, channel, what are they? Office?
Platform.
Platform? Yeah, there you go. So that really helped get it out of the gate in the first place.
And it's crazy to really look about how much money they spend now versus then, even so. There was one of those GQ pieces about directors, and the director is talking about that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw it, about that episode of season one, the Ned Stark beheading, uh-huh. and about how bare bones it was. Like, damn, we wish we could afford more extras here. We couldn't pay these people to be there. And then this was CGI, and this was like, we only had like 1 minute to do this. And it's just interesting. Apparently, they can do whatever they want now.
I think they shot a pilot for it. It rated and reviewed poorly. So they scrapped it. They fired a couple of characters and shot another one. So, I mean, there was still money going into it. But yeah, they definitely obviously had to amp it up. And I don't know what the expected trajectory of it was. I guess it could have been a straight play. Like, okay, this is going to build up in attention and acclaim. And once we get to the part where we have the dragons, well, it'll be financially viable and make sense for us to invest, you know, millions of dollars into having dragons on every episode. So this is probably why they are only doing, you know, six episodes. So pricey, yo. And if you notice, everybody's beloved dire wolves, they just completely vanished out of like all the latter episodes.
It's about dragons now.
Yeah. I mean, but yeah, you definitely can't have fucking massive wolves and dragons all in one episode.
Listen, you can't be flying whole crews of shit from Ireland to Serbia to fucking Spain, and these people are here, and then we got to build out snow with all kinds of craziness. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know their whole budgeting process, because on the other end, you would think, wouldn't you try your best as a platform, as you said, to just make money, no object, and just to produce the best show as possible, especially if it's printing money and getting more and more subscriptions for HBO? But I guess everything had to be done within reason. And I know D.B. Weiss and the other guy, I forgot his name, they wanted to move on to other things.
Yeah.
So that also was leading into, as I said, my relative pessimism. Because it's like, damn, it really just seems like y'all trying to conveniently wrap the whole shit up. And it doesn't necessarily have to be quite this way. But people are getting older. The show took place for, what, almost 10 years now.
Basically.
Bran is a grown-ass man. They try to roll his ass around, like his legs are mad long. So people were trying to move on. I remember a funny thing. Those two producers of the show, it's D.B. Weiss and I forgot the other person's name. They
do the were producing thing? The Confederates.
They were trying to produce this this other
show. Apparent, Confederacy
won. This HBO prestige drama about the Confederacy, if it was like a alternate timeline of the Confederacy winning, and there was a massive social uproar about it. Yeah, Ta-Nehisi Coates wrote a whole article about it, and that was that. Like, that shit, they came out with a press release for that shit, and that shit was literally done like less than a week after that. Like, yeah, we're not doing that. So
maybe times have changed. Maybe we can do it now.
Nigga. That should be 200 of those right now. They're like, nigga, the Confederacy is winning right now. So, it is coming to an end. I don't know. Like,
Doug, I hate to be the editorializer. I hate to do the things that you talked about a lot when we talked about this piece. But we got to do it before we move on.
What?
Who wins the Game of Thrones?
Who wins the Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
I would love the Night King to just like
just lay waste everybody.
It should make sense. Like, he's just gonna murder everybody and be like, yeah, like, it's over. It's very like one short episode. Like, everybody just gets massacred. Like, I don't know how much dragon glass they can what do you call that? Mine.
But what does he want?
Murder niggas. Yeah, like murder, death, control. I don't know. What did the rest of them want? Power. Like, everybody wants power. Now, who wins it? Wouldn't it only make sense for them to do the positive story, you know, Jon Snow and Danny when
first of all, one of them is going to die.
Democracy spreads.
That will uplift America. Idea. We need this psychic tale.
Well, I think it's going to be like separate kingdoms. They all
rule themselves and there's no Iron Throne.
Yeah. Or this is like a central power, but everybody pretty much
they're cool. They're nice.
Yeah. And then be like,
there's a the
United States of Restoros.
Oh, wow. That would be that's think piece for you right there. That's all.
Like I'm moving to Dorne.
Yeah, you know, wear frocks and shit and robes.
Drink wine every day.
Yeah, man, it sounds great. I hope, and you know, I'm a big Cersei fan.
Are you?
Yeah.
What is wrong with you?
Just for the acting quality. It's like just her face. Man. I find her face hilarious.
That smug look.
There's like that look. I'm like, that'll put my chin down face.
The perpetually smug look.
I'm like, damn, this is acting right here.
That's it. She's fired.
I just needed to survive just to see the stupid look on her face.
Well, word is she's supposed to be choked to death, so we'll see.
Oh, yeah? Don't tell me word. I don't want to hear anything. I don't know shit.
Word is everyone dies. So.
Shout out to Night King.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Oh, Gendry. That's my dark horse. I'll put $50 on Gendry.
I don't think he's so-and-so's son.
Yeah, he's Robert Baratheon's son. Well, one of his many bastards. Yeah, but they killed all the other bastards. Yeah,
so he's going to come back. But he ran.
So? He's fast, too.
Get a nigga that ran like that and be king. So, it just can't happen.
I actually like that call. Yeah, give me Gendry.
Wow. Give me Gendry. I'm trying to think of any other bit players that, you know, deserve some shine. But
Bran. Rickon. Rickon. Rickon.
Yeah, he got off.
Damn. That shit was cold.
His name was too goofy.
I like Rickon.
Yeah, that's why he died, though. Well,
should have zigged and zagged. It's just running straight.
Oh, man. It's fucked up.
Damn. Child murder.
Tyrion.
Yeah. Tyrion's going to die.
Yeah, he is. He is. Totally. Too short.
Jorah's going to die. Who's gonna die? Arya and Sansa will live.
One of them's gonna die.
Nah.
One of them's gonna die. John, I think Dany's gonna die.
Dany dying?
Yeah.
She could die.
Yeah, she can.
Yo, low key, strong chance that through speed writing and everything and production, they pretty much wrap up the whole
early
White Walker's coming. And then it's just a fight for the throne. And she actually turns into the villain because she just feels like it's her birthright to the throne. Yes, I have the hiccups again.
Yeah.
And then they have to kill her. That's it.
Ooh, I like that plot twist.
Yeah.
She goes mad. Is that why? Because she's like the Mad Queen.
Yeah, Mad Queen. Her father's the Mad King.
That's lit.
Yeah.
I'm for that.
You in for these prequels, by the way?
No.
No?
I'm never in for like unnecessary prequels. It has to be like at least 15 years or 10 years between. So niggas forgot about, oh shit, this is back. Like, don't just give me it immediately. It's too much.
I mean, if the quality is there, I'll fuck with it.
Tangentially. I'll get around to it. Bye.
Fair enough.
So DJ, this is the major phenomenon of the weekend, but there's another major phenomenon coming up as well.
Yeah.
So you know that all those coloreds care about.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
What?
Playoffs?
It's not just all those colors anymore.
Who is it?
City white men.
City white men, okay, dope. Who else?
That's it. That's all we need.
Chinese people? China.
Where's Jeremy Lin? He's on the Raptors, right?
Yeah, he's on the Raptors. Got that market.
Well, there you go.
Canada.
You got my man, the Punjab guy that's always on the sideline?
Yeah, with the turban.
Yeah, turban.
Yeah, he got mad bread.
Yeah.
I say that all those colors cares about it because, you know, typically, historically, in the lore, NBA basketball has been thought of as an urban sport, but as you say, it has grown and changed and is moving to a sort of new audience of young hip people who like exciting action.
Yeah. Also, Indiana.
And Kentucky and North Carolina.
And North Carolina.
So, you know, it's popular. Amongst the whites as well. And I say that because this piece, shout out to the Players Tribune.
Ah, yeah.
Home turf here.
Big shout.
All that. Did a piece with Kyle Korver called Privilege this past week.
And he solved racism.
He may have solved racism. I'm not even going to lie. If you were privy to how this sort of took off across
I did.
It's the social world and the amount of internet / black praise it got.
A lot of back pats. A lot of back pats. I saw a funny response to that, though. Actually, in relation, in a circular way, to like the Dwayne Wade retirement in Kobe's last game and everything.
Yeah.
You know that gif of, it's Kobe's last, it's like at the end of the game, Kobe's last game, and they have all the celebrities. It's cutting to all the celebrities like wilding out, like, oh, yeah. Shit. It was like that. It was like, Kyle Korver, racism is bad. And it showed like the gift, like everybody's like, oh,
everybody just partied.
It's lit. He figured it out.
I think that was a really good way to put it, though. It's like, I guess it was editorialized and written in a way that it let people feel their own sort of insecurities, so that when that the obvious point that, yes, we should not do these things comes through, everyone felt the need to be like, yes, this is how I feel as well. I'm white. And not to be acidic, but it was just weird the way it got picked up and moved around. If I can go through some things on the Slack channel and some things that are retweeted or passed around.
What's the name of the article itself, though?
Privileged.
Oh, yeah, privileged.
Privileged.
White privilege.
Yeah. The crux of the article, before I talk about who else shouted it out, because I wanted to give a little context to people who don't know, was that if you remember a few weeks ago, Russell Westbrook got into that big tuff when he said he smacked the shit out of somebody and their wife.
Nice which job. Was fuck you up and your wife.
And your wife. And everybody was like, oh shit, it's got real out here. And I laughed. I was like, it got real quick. So the word was that, oh, you know, the fan had said something to him, but there was no evidence of it at the time. And then they, I guess, went to the tape and found out that he was like, call him, hey, boy, what you doing, boy? Some wildly racist thing. And the Utah Jazz, in the meantime, had team meetings, and a lot of the players had voiced opinions that just the general racial tension of feeling like they're in some sort of zoo environment. And in these games.
In the middle of Utah.
In the middle of Utah, which is accurate.
Mormon country, like 99.9% white.
I've been to Utah. Been to Utah?
No, nigga, I ain't been to Utah.
I've been.
If I ever been to Utah, I'll be trying to get out of Utah.
I've been through Utah.
Okay.
I stopped in Salt Lake City and went in front of the sort of Jazz stadium. And I remember thinking, like, wow.
How many khaki pants did you see?
I mean, it's their city, so they don't feel like they need to wear the uniform, the Mormons. Like, okay. They don't. But it did feel like, wow, this is a weird fucking place, man. They had that big, you know, Latter-day Saints compound.
How many Mitt Romney jerseys did you see?
Jerseys. Is it just like a picture of like, is it like an emoji of just like coiffed hair and shit? That's his number. So weird. You see the John Stockton statue out front, and the streets are all partitioned into a grid. So this gigantic grid, and the city just sort of ends. So there's the stadium, and then just goes like off, and like, oh, this is a highway, and that's just like the shit is just in.
Plains and mountains.
Yeah, it's weird, and I end up going to a farmer's market they had that day for some reason.
And you spent like the day in there. I thought you were just like at the airport.
Nah, I drove through there.
Oh, drove through.
And I remember being like, wow, there's like no black people. I was trying to count.
You looked up, you're like, oh shit. That's Donovan Mitchell.
Right. Just hanging out. And the weirdest thing is I felt that people were so nice, but I didn't like it. Mm. So I'm sure that this whole incident happened. People had the reputation like, well, people that were Mormon country were nice, blah, blah, blah. And it's not a good nicety. It's a negative piece. And I guess when this piece happened and they wanted to reference this Russell Westbrook incident and Kyle stood up, he had the story about being teammates with Thabo Tafelosia prior to this in Atlanta, right, when Thabo got his leg broken by NYPD.
Yo, that story was so wild. I honestly did not believe it when it happened.
Yeah.
I was like, they broke his fucking leg.
I kind of forgot about this shit.
I didn't. I mean, it's not in the front of my mind.
Yeah.
I But I didn't forget about it.
But yeah. I was like, oh, yeah, that happened. And that was fucking crazy. Yeah. And it was kind of like a thing that just was like, whoop, like it happened.
Yeah, I guess both sides just wanted to wrap it up and not play it out in public.
But he definitely got his money.
Yeah.
So, you know, a Hawks player, Thabo Sefolosha, a few years ago, when they were in the playoffs, got his leg broken. And Kyle Korver was his teammate. And the big crux of this article is that this happened with Russ. He had the frame of reference to think about the Thabo incident and realize his first reaction was, well, I guess something, he did some shit or something happened.
I think to quote him, he said his first reaction thought was, what is Thabo doing out at night
in
the playoff game? That was his first thought. But then he had to catch himself and realize that same thing would not have happened to him if he were in that situation.
Exactly.
Very much most likely.
So the praise for this piece has been, I don't know, out of this world. And we could call it backpatting if we're going to be, you know, cynical as we tend to be. But it, I don't know, man. They Bernice King, fucking Martin Luther King's daughter, Jeremy Lin, Reggie Miller, Chris Long, the real wokest white man in sports.
Chris Long?
Yeah.
I mean,
he'd be out here doing real, not going to the president's house, saying statements about black people.
He's solid.
I fucked with him. Did he do something terrible? If you feel like, are you reticent over there?
No. I don't want to like. Nah, man, like this shit is so tepid, right? Like,
yeah.
Okay, it's good that you are anti-racist. Like, that's cool. Like, I fuck with it. But like, am I ready to give these people like the presidential? Medal of Freedom. Like, no, nigga. Like.
What's funny though is also look at the editorializing people like to do. Because when you retweet something, one of the big issues, and I'm putting it out there, that at work that people were questioning is like, people didn't really like it. They all retweeted it. And it's because people just want to editorialize the shit and put their own like thoughts on racism in it. So it's funny. Steve Kerr is like, yes. this is Mike Freeman, and he's a sports writer. Been covering professional sports for 25 years. I can't stress enough how rare it is for a white professional player to speak this way publicly, all caps. Bomani Jones, so maybe you'll listen to Kyle Korver if you won't listen to me. It's like everyone's putting the sort of the lens of like Bomani's like, I'm faux, controversial. Like, y'all know y'all fuck with me. I'm black, but you can fuck with this. LeBron, salute my brother in his, you know, bullshit PR.
Mad emojis and shit.
LeBron. How do you catch that? Praying hands, exclamation points.
LeBron's okay, not good at social. And he does mad emojis. I don't know, he's too big to do emojis. Like, it's a height limit to that shit.
Kenny Smith, my new favorite player, Kyle Korver.
Oh, God.
Reggie Miller, ovation. multiple.
Yeah. I didn't know if you were really going like this.
Hand. Son, like hair clapping emojis. Draymond Green, much respect. Who's Jeff Capel? He was
a coach or something.
I remember. Coach. Sean King put it in his bio.
Sean King? Oh, God. Put it in his bio?
Yeah.
That shit was bio? What is he, the link?
Nigga. Some professor. Connie Schultz at Kent State. We discussed your essay in my class today, Mr. Kyle Korver. Your Stephen A. had something to say about it. It's just, I don't know. We live in weird times, man. We live in weird times. And there's been even editorial pieces from The Nation, New York Times.
Yeah.
Freaking, that they have come behind it to, you know, editorialize their own thoughts about that. And the one about from Slate about Democratic messaging, I find hilarious, but kind of accurate if they want to get white people to, you know, frame in their way.
That the reason it's so ridiculous is because of the realities on the ground. Is that such a simplistic, straightforward action such as this means so much to so many people?
It's like, oh wow, like
racism.
Thought bad. It's thoughtful. But I guess shit, Trump did it, huh? We need it.
Yeah, I mean, well, to be honest, people definitely of all stripes and backgrounds need signaling mechanisms, and usually are going to connect and empathize most with someone who looks like you. Like, it's just human nature.
Yeah.
So for him to come forward, and figures such as Chris Long, as you said, to come forward and really stand on this platform of acknowledging your own privilege and trying to address or help address inequalities in our country and society or what have you. To us, on our side, we're like, all right, sure. Cool,
great.
That's good. Keep it up. But on the other end, they're like, wow, like, we didn't think, like, this shit could happen. Like, we got to make a statue.
And also, like, the sort of white, like, thank you, my brother. Like, this sort of, like, white people in arms, like yes, us too. And it's like,
it's honestly, this
part,
is
part, can I finish this real quick? I just want to say this, but I lose my train of thought. This is really the, I guess, ideological struggle for the soul of white people.
Yeah, exactly. Because this is what it's going to take. Milquetoast shit like this, which is in good faith, and I really appreciate it. Much respect. Like, to be honest, like, the cynicism is just not, is about the context. It's not about them doing this. But yeah, it's like for white men to come forward in good faith and to address these type of things and really publicly, visibly work to address the racism and inequalities in our society, as I said. But it's just a weird, I don't know, this is like calling the sky blue in some, some ways. Like, okay, you know, like we been saw the shit was blue. But it affects people differently. And he has a relatively large platform as well. This is, in a cynical way, what a lot of pundits have been asking athletes to be doing, particularly white male athletes to be doing for quite some time. Like, you know, Tom Brady is personal friends with Trump. He's never said anything particularly fond of him, but also not negatively, and not acknowledging any of his positions. Letting him cook. And anyone's lack of voice on important issues like this, especially if you have any stature in the broader American society, your silence does speak volumes in large degrees.
Yeah, shout out to the NBA for being a place where this can actually happen. Because even the Tom Brady thing is like, it's hard, I would say. Because shout out to Spencer Hawes and I don't know, a few of the other people's. It's hard to be sort of like an ineffectual non-ally all the way through being a flagrant white racist in the NBA.
Spencer Hawes was like that?
I guess he was like one of those, like, I don't know, like truthers. I don't know. Spencer Hawes was one of them.
Oh, he's like a troll online or something?
Yeah.
Just kind of wild. Okay.
Yeah. But even the jokes about Gordon Hayward, just like, it's hard. It's hard to actually pull it off.
Yeah.
Or even to be a non-entity. And in NFL, you can do that shit. You can just be like, yeah, you know, there's 52 of us. And you know, I'm Riley Cooper, and then fuck all y'all niggas.
I fight every nigga in here.
Yeah, I fight every nigga in here. But you know, catch passes, so whatever. We ain't get paid enough.
Right. Well, I mean, many of them are not being paid enough, but
yeah.
I mean, this is it definitely begs the question and calls into question the role and importance of athletes in our society. But the truth is they definitely have a lot of clout, right? So you know, people are looking at Aaron Rodgers and the greatest football player of all time, Tom Brady, like, okay, well, you're literally friends and acquaintances and golf buddies with Donald Trump. Like, what do you...
Damn, Aaron Rodgers is a boy too?
No. I'm sorry. I don't mean to mince words. I'm saying, like, these are the biggest athletes in the sport. They are indispensable to their teams. And they're white men. Like, I mean, I guess really the onus is definitely much more on Tom Brady. Like, Tom Brady had a Make America Great, you know, hat in his locker. Infamously. So from his affect and the way he lives his life, you're like, he's clearly just not a political person. Like, that nigga's like rich and the greatest football player ever, so he doesn't care, and he's married to a supermodel.
He doesn't have concerns anymore.
Yeah, like he doesn't have concerns, which I understand. But it's like, okay, well, you're certain things will be asked of you. That doesn't always mean that you will step up to that, but when people do, it's a good sign. It helps move us forward as a country.
Yeah, man. And on that note, I just want to be like, you know, Jazz and Six, man.
I think Nets and Six.
Yeah, man. Houston, you know, Houston. I know.
Where's Corver?
Utah.
Corver's on Utah. Oh, yeah. I'm brain fart.
Yeah.
What other white players are in the league that, like, I mean, now that there can't really be a cacophony of similar statements and Players Tribune articles from all the white guys now. Like, it's kind of...
You missed your boat.
You missed your chance.
Yeah, you had your chance to Well, it'd be different if it's like a collective, like the Plumleys together coming arms.
Oh, three Plumleys?
Plus the Zellers?
Shh. Now you got something. Bring that back to the desk. Talk about how they've managed through and what they've seen.
I mean, it's interesting. You know, they have to white minority.
Duke
know.
And North Carolina.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
Damn, I wasn't ready for that, Brandon. Anyone else? It's not that many white guys in the NBA, like American white guys.
Yeah, it's a tough position to be in.
Yeah.
And most of them are like the sort of Midwestern-y, like just big corn-fed motherfuckers. Like,
yeah, Indiana, I thought
you. Yeah, but shout out to Dante DiVincenzo.
Dante DiVincenzo.
East Coast Italian and shit.
Yeah, I mean, first name Dante. Just fuck with that off strength. It's athletic. So, Nets in 6.
Interesting.
So, playing the Sixers. We'll be there at least one game.
Indeed, and
going crazy.
What are we shooting for? 21 champs.
2021 champs. 2022.
I like it. Beat the Kings in the finals, and everything should be Gucci. At that point.
Say less.
So it's been on the great Send the Link podcast, DJ. I know we had a lot of chatter and shit at the beginning, off pod and whatnot, but I feel like we were able to bring you into the important things this weekend: basketball and Game of Thrones.
Those are two of the major things that revolve around my life. So, of course, I'm with it.
Yeah. So, of course, check us out where you need to check us out: SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts as well. And
that was like a weird thumbs up.
No problem.
Yeah.
And yeah, keep listening, and we'll be back next week, right? I guess.
Yeah, God willing.
Yeah, God willing. Yeah, we'll be there. So check with us. Peace.